Live from the Virtual Tone Studios in Houston, Texas, it's Tough Talk with Tony Gambone, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Tony Gambone.
All right, welcome to the show. My name is Tony Gambone, and hey folks, it's the 22nd of January. We're 3 weeks in, and I'm curious on how it's going in your world. So you can let us know by calling into the show, 347-989-1363. Now, you know, a lot of you have been following Tough Talk with Tony Gambone for going on 7 years now. And the year 2015, we kind of shifted a little bit, okay? And we're going to talk more about shifting here in the monologue here in upcoming pieces. But we have shifted more towards the Christian-based radio show. I'm trying to bring into play more of what I've been learning and the value that I find in being a disciple of Christ. So we're going to be heading down that journey more and more every week. So you'll be hearing from guests that are authors and speakers as always, but in different arenas, and we will be bringing in the Christian-based show. So I hope you're as excited about it as I am, because I can tell you, since I have found Christ going on 5 years, February 14th this year, my life has changed. And a lot of you know my background and have heard my story. If you haven't, you can find it on the website at www.fromlasvegastothepromisedland.com. And if you have read the book, I'd love your feedback. And if you haven't, pick up a copy of it so you will understand why I shifted my show platform. And I'll tell you, for the first two callers that call into the show today or email the show today, I will send you a copy of the book. So you can email me at info@toughtalkradionetwork.com. You can even hit me up on Facebook under Tony Gambone, or Tough Talk Radio Network, or you can just call into the show, 347-989-1363. Okay, so, you know, people who follow me on Facebook know that every day I post Tough Talk That Matters. It's a quote that I find in my readings or somewhere along my day. And today's post was to take time to think about when God made you exactly as you are. He knew exactly what he was doing. So for me, when I read that, I came across something that kind of mirrors up to what I speak about every week. You know, my topics when I go out and speak is the word gamble. 20 years in the casino industry, one of the things that I never realized that I would be speaking off the word gamble. Gamble for me stands for growth, accountability, marketing, belief, leverage, and enjoyment. Okay, and my beliefs is the word I'm hitting on today, because we're always shifting in our lives, okay? And a lot of times if we don't shift our beliefs, we can't stay up with the times, so to speak. We can't stay up with ourselves. We can't stay up for what we were exactly created for. So when people talk about beliefs, a lot of times they say you got to change your beliefs. Well, the word changed to me and many people are, well, maybe a little scary, threatening, hard to accept. I don't know, there's a whole bunch of things we could say about it. But instead of saying change, I ask people to shift. Just make a little shift in your life. In enough shifts, just like anything else, enough little things that take place will cause big things to happen. So if you can shift your life a little bit and realize that you are exactly who you were created to be, and we were all created by someone that was, well, just let's just say, much, much more smarter than we ever could be. So let's just roll with what they've given us to do. Take away all the things in our lives that make us think that we have to do this or we should be doing that because of all the noise around us. And learn more about what you're here for. Find out what your is. Now, I know that sounds great, but most people might even be rolling their eyes. How do you do that? What do you do? How do you start? Well, you know, the first word in gamble is growth, right? And with growth, you have to read. You have to educate yourself. You have to understand what it is you want to learn. Once you understand what you want to learn, you can read more about it. They say that the average American reads less than one book a year. And they also say that if you spend 1 hour a day reading on something that you want to be good at, in 5 years, you will be known as the expert. Well, I haven't been doing it for 5 years yet, but I've been reading, and I'm getting smarter, and I'll always be able to keep learning. But if you take that step and start creating some ways for you to get smarter, and then you'll be able to figure out what it is you want to do, and then maybe what you were here to do. I know in my book, From Las Vegas to the Promised Land, I found out my purpose. Now, not because I wrote the book, only because I lived the life that's in the book. And when I came to find in Christ, I was able to understand what I was exactly here for. Now, I don't want to give away the whole book, but, you know, I spent 39, almost 40 years of my life with a disabling disease called Crohn's. And I kicked it. I wasn't supposed to be living after the age of 25. So at the age of 19, I was given a death sentence. Maybe I'm just stubborn. I like to think I'm strong-minded. But I found out later in life that I was here for a purpose. And that was to tell my story and to get others to tell theirs. So as you know, we're very big on compilation books here at Tough Talk. We're always trying to put people in a book so they can tell their story, so they can empower others. And, you know, as I say that, I must, you know, inject one thing. When you empower others, you will realize how empowered you become. Let me say it again so you understand it. When you tell your story and others come up to you and they say how empowered they were by your story, not your sales pitch, not your service, your journey. You know, you got from here, high school, college, marriage, corporate, self-employed, whatever it is you took along your way. That empowers others. And when they come up and tell you that, well, I can't really say anything except you have to experience it. You will be more empowered than you ever imagined. So think about that. When you're out there doing what you do, allow people to know a little bit about you. It might help them through their process. And I believe that that's what we're all here for, is to help others. So I wanted to touch on a couple things. I like to bring up books that I'm reading just to help others maybe get a jump start on that growth part, right? One of the books I'm in every morning, it's a book written by Tony Dungy, and, you know, for you guys out there, it's a daily devotional, but it's a daily challenge. And Tony Dungy is awesome. I love the way he puts things. It allows me to open up my brain and think a little bit about how it relates to me or what I could do to help others relate to it. So first step of growth is opening up that key, opening up that lock, that door in your brain that allows things to come in. Another book I've been jumped into, and you know, folks, I get books every week because of interviewing people on the radio, and I read a chapter here and a chapter there, and I can't stay in the book that long because, well, I just can't concentrate that long, I guess. But one of the books I'm reading right now is Business Ground Rules. It's Be Great in Business, 100 Lessons for Success by Tony Geary and Peter H. Thomas. Tony Geary is one of my favorites. He's known as the results guy. And it's really cool. If you don't read a lot and you say you don't like to read, this is a great book to start with because there are two to maybe three pages. I would say the average is 1.5 pages long. Just things that have happened in their lives that they wrote down, 100 lessons of success that they found. Some cool sayings, some good things. So I really think it's a good opportunity for you to get started on the reading process. One of the other books I started reading is called Crazy Love. It's by Francis Chan. Okay, it's Overwhelmed by a Relentless God. Awesome book. It's hard to put down. It will make you think a lot. So that's a couple of the books that we have here today. And I know that we have some guests on the show that have written lots of books. My first guest today has written 14 books, and boy, is that cool. Because one of the things that I have found when you write, And, you know, I'm a late bloomer. I'm 50, going on 59 this year, and I just started this practice, I would say, 5 years ago. So one of the things that I found out was I was really missing out on a lot of good stuff. But when someone writes a story, when someone writes something down and they can look back at it, it's a reminder of how blessed you are every day, because we get caught up in the whining part of our life where we never think we're getting what we deserve. We're never getting what the other guy has. And half the time, if we get what the other person has, we don't want it anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of things going on there. So if you're not an author, I understand it. How about writing some stuff down in a journal, on a piece of paper, an old napkin that you found in your pocket? Try something. Get started on it, okay? Make that shift in your life. Change your belief system a little bit at a time. You know, I mentioned I'm going on 59. So, you know, in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and now the 2000s and 2015, things change constantly. If you don't shift with that change, you're going to be stuck way back down the road. You're not going to be up with the times. Now, does that make you any less of a person? I don't think so. But it does allow you to stay up current, keep up with the pace, and reflect on where you are and where you've come from and how you got there. So I think it's important. Okay? Love to hear your feedback on it. 347-989-1363. Make sure to remember, you go to that website, From Las Vegas to the Promised Land.com. Pick up a book. Let me know what you think. And we'll be right back after this break.
Feeling burnt out or lost on where to go next? Feeling like you own a job instead of a business, or that your business is running you instead of you running it? Expert business advisor Mike Calderwood can help. Mike uses a personalized, strategic, and proven approach to help you identify what is and isn't working in your business. He'll then help you establish an action plan so your business can thrive. Mike Calderwood, providing you straightforward solutions to gain a real advantage in your business. Learn more at MikeCalderwood.net.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone.
Okay, welcome back to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. And if you missed the first part of the show, the word of the week is belief. Learn how to shift it. Challenge of the week is shift your beliefs a little bit at a time. Okay, start out by educating yourself on how you could be better at what you want to do. Dig deeper into your life and understand where you've been, where you're going, and how you're going to get there. Lean on God to get a little bit of that help to get there. My first guest today is a young lady by the name of Tamara Doris. And, she has authored 14 books. She's a certified hypnosis and with degrees in psychology and communications. She spent her adult life researching and writing about personal, professional, and spiritual development. And she's also a college professor, a workshop leader, and the host of a radio show, where she interviews experts and authors from around the world. So she's authored a few books. The books she loves writing the most are spiritual humor, such as Secrets of a Spiritual Guru series, and her latest, The Law of Distraction and the Art of Intention. Tamara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tony. It's great to be here.
Well, 14 books. That is, you're a very busy lady.
I talk a lot, so I just write it down, and it just comes out quick.
Well, you know, you say that, but a lot of times, my last book, the lady I'm working with wants me to write keynote speeches from it. So I'm like, well, I can tell you some stuff, but writing it down is kind of difficult. And she said, just record what you say, and we'll transcribe it. And I thought that was really simple for me.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. No, actually, I was just teasing. I have been a writer ever since I was, you know, my mother will tell you 10 years old. So I was writing little stories in my grandmother's newsletter at work. So I've been a writer my whole life, and it's just, I'm blessed. It's just one of those natural things that comes to me, and I enjoy it so much that I don't think I'll ever stop.
Mm. So you do workshops. You're a professor at college. You host radio shows. How do you balance all your time?
Meditation. I have a morning meditation and prayer every single morning of my life, no matter what, even if I have to get up extra early. And it's that connection. I think that it's just imperative that we stay connected with Source, God, whatever you want to call the Heavenly Father, but we have to stay connected in order to remember what our purpose is. And as I was listening to you, and I applaud you for your journey and what you've done, I lived in Vegas for about a year, and that's about all I could take. I had to get out of there. That was crazy. And when I heard your last name, I'm like, I think I heard the last name Gabon on the radio a time or two back then. No, I'm just teasing. Because it was when I lived there, it was all mafia. It was all the mafia was there. So it was kind of a scary but exciting place back then, and I'm sure you remember what I'm talking about. But I think that when I started my journey to living a better life, I read a lot. And you had mentioned earlier about how most people read maybe a book a year. And I literally log probably, I'm going to say 5 to 10 books a month. And I've done that for over 20 years now. So my head is just like exploded with knowledge from everything from personal to professional to spiritual to psychological to business. So I guess the reason I'm able to write so many books is because I ingest that information and then I get an inspiration and I apply it. And so, you know, so it's new and original and fresh, but it's just an accumulation of all the knowledge that I've drank up from all the other wonderful authors I've read.
And, you know, you made a statement, drank up, and that's something I would say, because it's hard to explain all the different things that you get out of a book when you read it, because if you go back and read it again, I always revert to the Bible, because I could read the same verse every day for a month and get 30 different things out of it, because our life is in a different place. Just like in a book, you can read the book over a second time and get a completely different meaning out of it because you're in a different place in your life. So I find it's really important. The more you read, the more you're able to survive, I think, in today's fast world. What's your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree. You know, it's so funny because I am a notorious highlighter. When I read, you know, when we're traveling or whatever, and I read, I always highlight. So I'll have a book and I'll highlight, you know, the heck out of it, and it goes back on my big bookshelf. And then recently I'm doing research for a new book, my 15th book, and I pull out a book and I thought that would be a really good source. So I pull out this book and I reread it, and great, I highlighted some things, but wow, all the things I missed. So yeah, I absolutely agree with that. We continue to get new things, and I'll go one further and say, once I've finished a book, because you know it's a labor of love, but once you finish a book, you're just tired of it and you want to put it away. You don't want to read it. And so I'll do that, and every now and then I'll go back to one of my books to find something and I'll start reading it, and I'm like, I'm so embarrassed because I want to say, I can't put this down. I shouldn't say that about my own stuff, but sometimes I read it and I'm like, wow, now I realize why I did this, because you can tell the passion that went into it. But when I'm writing it and when I'm done with it, I just want to put it away. I don't want to see it for at least a year.
Yeah, I that's interesting. I've been so blessed to be able to do a radio show for, as we were speaking before we went on the air, almost 7 years now, and I've learned so much education from the people that I've interviewed, and just like what you said, you know, I there is stuff that I read, and after a while, I'm like, okay, if I don't hide this book, I'm going to be in trouble, because I'm giving up other information that I'm not taking advantage of by reading that's sitting on my desk. So I totally agree with that. Let me jump back a little bit and find out. You mentioned that you lived in Vegas for a year, and uh-huh. we'll leave that there because they, with the saying that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But mentioning the time frame of what was going on in Vegas back then, I'm going to say it was in the 80s because in the 90s, Las Vegas changed considerably, and I spent
yep.
from 80 to 98 there. And so the thing of it is that where are you from originally, and where are you calling in from today, just so we can let the listeners know?
Sacramento and Sacramento.
All right.
So I left for Vegas. I met somebody in Vegas who happened to be a casino manager, which casino shall remain nameless. And I was taken away, and I wasn't even 20. And so I just on a wild hair went to Vegas, and I won't say it was a huge mistake. It was a big learning experience. But about a year of it was all I could handle, and then I came running home. I'm back. Haven't left since.
That's funny. I have lots of relatives in Las Vegas, and I was a dealer for many years and then became a casino manager in different properties in the South, in the riverboats, and in Las Vegas. And I've been gone 17 years, and there's times when I visit, and I'm excited on the plane, and 2 hours after I'm there, it's like, I don't miss giving up all my money anymore. So it's fun, but I don't miss it at all. I did. My wife made me run from there as fast as she could get me to run. So, and that was the best thing that ever happened to me. So, let me ask you: you do workshops. What types of workshops do you do?
Well, my premise, and honestly, my workshops, my coaching, even with my corporate speaking, which may have different facets to it. But my premise, Tony, is to stay in alignment. My premise is for people to learn to stay connected to source, however they see that. You know, and I personally, I've heard you speak earlier this morning on the show, I personally am a big fan of God myself. But, you know, for some people that's uncomfortable. So when I go out in the public arena and I speak, I just say your source, your creator. And to stay in alignment with that, nothing is ever wrong, no matter what. And so my workshops are about people having intentions, and whether someone wants to meet the man of her life or someone wants to create money or whatever, it doesn't matter. On the surface, that's what they think they want, but what they really want is to be connected to their source. So I help people with their intentions to get them to the point to make them realize what they really just need is connection.
I used to be told not to speak about politics and religion on the radio. And so politics, I still don't speak about because, well, it's just not a safe place. There's not enough honest information to find out with. But I did
right.
turn to the religion part because of how it's so helped me in my life and allowed me to get clearer. And I've had, when I speak, a lot of people say to me, you know, well, I don't necessarily believe in God. And I'm like, well, whatever you believe in, you need to reach inside yourself and find what it is that works for you. And I have found by telling people that, when they really try to reach inside themselves, it brings them to God because, well, there's just no other explanation. Even science explains things differently. But so I have been on this journey since the first of the year because it has helped me so much to understand my purpose here. And with your background, okay, it always seems to probably, for me, come to what is the purpose of why a person's in business, why they want to sell a product, why they want to live a certain way, why they believe the way they believe. Do you find that people have to kind of shift their way of thinking or maybe find a center? I know with meditating that there's a center, but how do you get people to make that shift? Is it a piece at a time? Is it a drastic move? What's your experience with that?
Well, again, I use intentions. So the way that I attract people, because I come, you know, my my expertise besides psychology and hypnotherapy really revolves around neuroscience and biochemistry. And so I understand the complete holistic person. And I use intention because that's what people think they want. So someone thinks that she won't be happy until she has the perfect mate, or someone thinks they won't be happy until their business is successful. So you have to have a point of what you want, because otherwise people won't be motivated to make that shift. And then once we find something that we want, and sometimes it is just inner peace. Sometimes it is just that feeling of being connected. But most of the time, honestly, it's not. We live in a very fast-paced society, and people think that they want things and situations to make them complete. And so through the work and through my books and through the things that I talk about, they become to recognize that it's really about going inside themselves and understanding why they want that. And as soon as I can get people to that place to say, well, I want that perfect man in my life because then I'll feel happy. And then I say, so feeling happy is really what you want. And you know, and that just starts the conversation. And when I say meditation, I don't just say, okay, go meditate. It's really about explaining to people that in order to connect with Source, they have to cut off all of the external noise that's going on around us 24/7. I mean, it's always going around except for when we sleep. So you need to really slow down, be quiet, be in nature, play with your dog, and not be around all the noise. And in those very sweet moments, you can catch that connection that you have. And so it's just a matter of living more mindfully, I think.
So getting quiet is important. In today's world, you know, when you walk into the mall and it looks like you're in the land of zombies, everybody has a device in their hands and not even looking up, they're just looking at their phone. And they go home and, you know, they're eating dinner with a phone in their hand instead of a fork. It's kind of scary. I'm always telling people to leverage the enjoyment part where you put the phone up. And, of course, if you're a brain surgeon, I guess it's important to have a phone close by. But unless you're a brain surgeon, there's really no reason why you can't have dinner with your family, why you can't play with your dog, why you can't take a walk without that device vibrating or making a noise, which will allow you some quiet time in the fast pace.
Absolutely, so, absolutely. You know, it sounds like you were in my college classroom last night where I had to tell them all to put their phones away.
Okay, well, so tell me, what college do you teach at?
Well, I teach at American River College, and I teach at Sacramento State University, where when I do Sac State, I teach for, I do continuing education, so I go to different state agencies, you know, state prisons and Department of Social Services and things like that, and I teach their managers communication skills. And so it's a really interesting mix to go from, you know, college to university and to teach in that arena. But I really enjoy it. And when I teach communications, I bring a little psychology and neuroscience into it. So I really enjoy it quite a bit.
And so you're a give back type of person because you're doing this education, as you mentioned, in prisons and other state facilities. So that is a reward in itself. I always believe that when you can help someone else first, it's unexplainable the reward you get out of it. I mean, we all get paid, could do a service, but that piece of it is unexplainable. Do you feel the same way?
I don't even feel like it's a piece. I feel like it's the purpose. I feel that when we are really, really connected with who we are, we realize that we're all interconnected and that our purpose on this planet is to serve one another, and we're so rewarded when we do that. So that's kind of one of my underlying missions, is just getting people, because, you know, and you know this, once we're connected with God, once we're connected with what our purpose is here, we realize that our purpose is to serve, whether you want to call it serving God or serving others, it doesn't matter, it's all the same. And so, yeah, I think that that's our number one job, is to serve others. In fact, in the new book that I'm writing, in the chapter I have on gratitude, I say, if you feel sorry for yourself or your life's not working out, stop whatever you're doing right now, put the book down, and go serve somebody, because that'll get you out of your funk quicker than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, but people, let me play the other side of the coin. People say, well, I'm really busy. You know, the mailman comes to my house every day with bills, and I have to stay out there, and I have to make it work, and I have to, and I have to, and I have to. And when they take the I out and put the we in, I think that it is a difference. But for me, you know, it was a life-threatening situation that changed my ways. You know, and so for the stubborn people like myself out there, sometimes a wall has to fall on us and we have to be pinned down for a little bit before we see the reward of that. So I hope that your work helps people see that before the wall has to fall down on them. Because, you know, when all them bricks hit you, it hurts. And, you know, getting up and getting started in that journey again, I mean, it's very rewarding. But, man, it takes a long struggle. So how can people find you, get involved in what you're doing? Do you go and speak to their groups?
And yes, but before I go there, may I make a comment on what you just said?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I used to feel the same way. I used to be like, oh my gosh, why don't people see this? This is the truth. This will help them. And then it occurred to me, and it was in prayer one time, that it came to me that some people are either destined or predestined to learn the way that you did or to learn the way I did, because that's their mission. So that going through that gives them the passion to want to empower people. Because you know what? Very, very few thought leaders, very few really good ones came from milk and honey. Very few of them had an easy breezy life and just went to college and said, oh, I'm going to motivate people. Very few people. So some of us have to go through some really tough times because then we surface and we can go out and with a passion and say, I know there's a better way. So I think that's the reason why it's so hard for others. And then there's many, many people who are in the middle of the road who know there's something missing from their lives, and they're the ones that just, you know, come to me easily and say, what do I do? How do I fix this? And, you know, and they're the ones that are more open. So I don't think that you can go wrong. I think that whatever path you choose is the path that you choose for a reason.
That's well put. I like that. It's a different look. I like that. I'm going to steal that. I hope you know. I'm going to put your name at the end of it. Yeah, no, I and that's what I mean about learning from doing these shows. I have should have bought stock in 3x5 cards because I have a bunch of them with little things written down on them that I learned from the shows. And just like a book, they're in a stack with a big binder clip on them, and I go through them from time to time, and, you know, it bounces out at me. And I say, oh, I should have been doing this. Oh, this makes sense. So it's really important for people to understand, to listen, to read, to learn, and to try new things. So we're out of time, but I would love for you to tell everybody how they can contact you, when your radio show's on, how they can tune into it, and if you will come back and be a guest on our shows again, because there's a lot more information we haven't touched on.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you for that. People can go to my website at tamradoris.com, and Doris has two R's in it, so tamradoris.com. My radio show is spiritsalad.com. And you know what? I'm excited. I just came out with a new joy journal that you can find on my website, which is a journal that helps people stay in alignment with what their intentions are. It has a big, huge section that is all about gratitude, counting your blessings. So on those days when you're having a rough day, you can open your joy journal and you can say, oh, that's right, I'm so blessed about this and that. So, yeah, that's kind of my new news.
Very good. Very good. And I truly hope that you will come back and participate with us some more. I know that it's California time. It's a lot earlier out there and that you got up early for us, but I can't thank you enough for taking time out for us today.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Tony, and I'll be happy to come back.
Awesome. Okay, folks, we are up against the clock, so I'm going to take a commercial break. I'm going to come back with my next guest, who is, well, he's from my old area of town. You know, he's in the Philadelphia area where I grew up, and he's a minister. His name is Kevin Benton, and he's the author of a book that is called Field Trip to Hell, and some of us might be able to relate to that, and some of us might not. But if you stay tuned, when we come back, you're going to find out more about Kevin Benton.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location. Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Join Judy Hoberman on her radio show, Selling in a Skirt, Mondays at noon central, for exciting discussions about challenges for women in today's society. The talk is about women in business, work and life balance, leadership, and current events related to gender communication. Be prepared to be inspired, motivated, and challenged. Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman on the Tough Talk Radio Network is your connection to women nationally, internationally, and globally. So get comfy and see what the buzz is all about. Listen live on Mondays at noon by going to sellinginaskirtwithjudyhoberman.com.
Do you want to know the secret to building a successful business quickly? It's all about taking action. But not just any action. It takes inspired and consistent action to get profits. Join Michelle Sism, the six-figure results lady, as she asks successful entrepreneurs their profitable secrets every Monday at 2 p.m. Central Time on Take Action, Get Profits with Michelle Sism on the Tough Talk Radio Network. If you're ready to take action and get profits, you can find out more about the show at TakeActionGetProfitsRadio.com.
Okay. Welcome back to Tough Tony Gambone, and what a great show we're having so far. My first guest, Tamara Darris, and you can find out more about her by going to her website, TamaraDarris.com, and it's TamaraDarris.com. Incredible stuff, 14 books, working on her 15th book, and I tell you, it's well worth checking out the website, okay? Check out her radio show and get a couple of her books. My next guest is a gentleman by the name of Kevin Benton, and he is from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and as everyone knows, that's my old stopping grounds, grew up right outside of Philadelphia, way back 58 and a half years ago, but I'm real excited about this because Kevin has written a book, and the book is titled A Field Trip to Hell, and it's it's experienced the 30 torments of hell firsthand without having to stay for an eternity. So I want to welcome Kevin to the show. Kevin, welcome.
Yeah. How you doing? Thanks for having me, Tony, and just want to say I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So I want to dig in a little bit deeper into your bio here because you're a basketball player, and as I mentioned, you know, I grew up in Norristown, Pennsylvania, which is about 18 miles west of Philadelphia, and and I have children who have been playing sports all their lives, and so I read here that you were very big in the basketball arena. So tell me, how did you go into sports and then come out to where you are today?
Well, to be honest, I wasn't good in my earliest stages of playing basketball. Kind of got into it because my older brother was into it. And I was called all the negative nicknames in the playground growing up, you know, Garbage Kev and, you know, all the names that would be in line with someone who couldn't play. But then one summer, you know, I grew like 4 inches over one summer. And so with the height that I had been blessed with, I said, well, you know what, maybe I can try to do something with this. But I really just got into it because my older brother was into it and I played, you know, for fun. And I think one of the things that motivated me to start taking basketball a little bit more serious, one day as a kid, I was sitting at the top of the steps, and I heard my mom downstairs talking to somebody. And next thing I know, I kind of heard her starting to cry. And what she was saying was, you know, God, please bless my children to be able to go to college because I don't have the money. I don't know how they're going to get to college. But even if I have to go into debt for the rest of my life, my children are going to college. And me sitting at the top of the steps hearing this, it kind of did something for me. And so I went back to my room, and that next day I started getting up 6 o'clock in the morning every day, going over to the playground, because I just could not let my mom and dad go into debt, quote-unquote, for the rest of their lives so I can get to college. And if I can fast forward, my brother, my sister, and I, all of us are college graduates. You know, we got our degrees. My brother played basketball in college. So that was kind of really motivated me to kind of start taking it serious. I found something that I could do well, and I said, hey, I'm going to apply myself. And it was my mom and dad and the investment that they made in my brother, my sister, and I, and just not wanting to, you know, to see them suffer financially so that we can go to college. And so that's kind of what kind of springboarded me into it.
Mm. That's interesting, because in today's world, most children expect mom and dad to do whatever they have to do to get them whatever they want. So it sounds like your parents did a really good job in raising you so that you had were able to see that value. So you had mentioned that you weren't really good at basketball.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, sometimes I think God puts us on a journey in life where we take paths to learn where to go, where not to go, how to end up where we are today. How do you think playing basketball, or do you think playing basketball was a big part of bringing you to where you are today?
It had a great deal to bringing me to where I am today, because some of the disciplines that I learned from playing basketball has carried over into my working experiences in terms of getting to work on time every day, never calling out to the exception of vacation, you know, wanting to do a great job at work. You know, these things kind of carry over into your personal life, because I remember my college coach used to tell us, if you get to practice on time, you're late. So get there a half hour early and things of the sort so you can stretch and get warmed up. So I see a lot of the teamwork qualities and sportsmanship, it kind of carries over into, you know, of course, into my personal life, my work life. And so you talked about that, the path that God has for us and how he can use those things to build us into who we are, you know, stemming from me, you know, being the not-so-good player. I remember being a freshman at Overbrook High School, and you know, I was young for my age. I was 12, going on 13 as a ninth grader, and I started for JV. And then when the coach, you know, checked the grades and the ages of all the players, he decided that I was too young. And so he said, look, we got guys on the team that are 15 and 16 years old that, you know, they're going to have to play in front of you. You had to wait your turn. So my playing time got reduced, you know, to about 2 to 3 minutes, or as they would call it, garbage time. We were up a lot of points, which was really discouraging. And during the second marking period, some of the older guys, you know, had flunked out. They didn't make the grade. So I was forced to start. I ended up leading us in scoring with 12 points a game. After that, I transferred to Massbaum High School to play with my brother, you know, who was a huge inspiration and good role model in my life. And so we had the opportunity to play for 2 years. By the time I was a senior, I was the top senior coming out of Philadelphia. I was the player of the year, you know, over some of my good friends who played at the NBA. Aaron McKee is one. Rasheed Wallace is another friend of mine. And what was so interesting was when we had the All-Star game my senior year, guess who was coaching it? My freshman coach at Overbrook, and now I'm walking into the locker room as the top senior, and he's telling everybody, I told you he was going to be a great player. So, you know, it's a path that we take, and though it may cause us pain, sometimes may cause us suffering, you know, which we wouldn't volunteer for. When you come out on the other side, you'll see the value that it gave to you as a person in terms of your character, in terms of how you treat other people and things of the sort. So I moved from garbage can to the player of the year, so to speak. And then, of course, I went on to play professionally over in Europe and Asia, and had a short stint with the Philadelphia 76ers, had the opportunity to play against Kobe Bryant, Rick Mahorn, some of the NBA greats, some of the best players in the world in the NBA and even overseas. And so humble beginnings can lead to great endings. And that's why, you know, we encourage people, no matter what you're going through, judge God on the ending, not in the middle, you know.
Mm. Well put. And, you know, being from Philadelphia, playing on the 76ers, how did you contain yourself not to be too big to fit in the room? Because, I mean, let's face it, that's where you're from,
yeah.
right? That's the dream. How did
yeah.
you stay humble in that process, or was that a lesson?
Well, it was kind of easy from the standpoint of I had a good upbringing, my mother and father. So here I was, this professional basketball player, and when I would come home, my dad would say, take the trash out. So that kind of stuff will humble you, you know, or keep you founded and keep you grounded and keep you humble. And, you know, as you get older, you really start to realize that all that you are and all that you're not is really because of God, you know what I mean? And so just a good upbringing and, you know, my mother and father just keeping me, my brother, my sister and I, you know, just grounded and founded. So, you know, around the house, you weren't a professional basketball player, you just Kevin. So, you know, you had to do the dishes, you know, and things like that. And so those things kind of kept me humble, you know, as well.
Well, the reason, Kevin, I asked you that is because I have a 27-year-old who's been playing ball since he was a little guy, and he's
okay.
been playing football. And he's gone through college. He plays arena ball now. He's played semi-pro. His dream is to get to the NFL. And
okay.
the thing of it is you know, when he comes and stays here for a couple months at a time in between seasons, just to, so he'd be by the house,
mm-hmm.
he's got chores, man. I mean, you know,
right.
I love him to death, and I hope that he makes a lot of money so he can take care of me someday. But in the meantime,
no, <that's right.
laughs> I don't want him to forget the skills of emptying the dishwasher or cleaning up,
right.
you know,
that's
behind
right.
himself. So
that's right.
I think that's important. I think that's
yeah,
very important.
Absolutely.
So tell me, you the book, A Field Trip to Hell.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that because the title says BAM.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bestseller. What
yeah.
made you write it? And what is it that you got out of writing it?
Okay, the interesting thing is when I first started writing the book, I really just started writing. I didn't know what the title was going to be. And kind of where it was going to lead, but I did have a goal in mind, and my goal was to really encourage readers about what it means to experience what I call inherited pain and consequential pain and how God can use both to take a mess and make a miracle. And what I mean by inherited pain is that's pain in our lives that we didn't ask for, we didn't pray for, it was out of our control or was somebody else's bad decision that fell on us, and it's affecting us. It's affecting our thinking, us emotionally, it's affecting our behavior, and that type of pain tends to be associated with anger, blame, and the tendency to become self-righteous because it wasn't our fault. And then there's that consequential pain because we're not perfect. We all make mistakes. We all make bad decisions, and that's, of course, pain that we brought on ourselves. And that type of pain tends to be associated with guilt, shame, and regret because you wish that you can turn back the hands of time and make another decision. So that was the initial direction. So I just began to try to tell the story of my journey. And I know when people, you know, hear the word hell, they immediately put up defenses. Well, it is what people think it is, but it's not what people think it is. I think that all of us can say, figuratively speaking, that we've been through some type of hell in life. Now, I'm not at all implying from a doctrinal and theological standpoint that hell is on earth, you know, which, you know, some believe, and that's fine. I'm not here to knock what others believe. I'm just here to present my doctrine, my theology, my research, my experience, sort of like a mailman, you know, in the spirit of love, in the spirit of respect. But this is just what I believe, and you can use it if you choose. And so I began to tell this journey about my journey. I had a near-death experience where I had a rare heart disease, and the doctors gave me one day to live, and how I was able, by the grace of God, to come out on the other side of that trial. And you know, that experience was like a figurative hell for me, you know what I mean, going through that experience. And I wanted to share how the favor of God can bring us through these trials, troubles, and tribulations, the pain, the problems, and the persecution that we sometimes face in life. And then I make a transition into doctrine and theology about the afterlife place called hell according to the Bible. I don't get into who's going there and stuff like that. I don't harp on that. I kind of more so lay out its characteristics. So I get into the 30 revealed torments. That's really what it is, the 30 revealed torments of hell according to the Bible, because at one point it was only believed to be 7. And so it's been this progressional growth over time that's more being exposed. You know, like Deuteronomy 29:29 says that the hidden things belong to God, but the revealed things belong to us and our children, that we may obey everything in this law. So I make this transition, and I wanted to kind of put it in a non-threatening way. Like, people don't have to, they don't have to read the book and feel like a bad person, because it's not about what you do. It's about the characteristics of the place. You know, it's kind of what I tend to focus on. And I put it in a fictional story that has a little bit of mystery to it. It's a little suspense. It's a little scary, but it's more so informative. And so it's this weird kind of book that has this blend of my personal journey, which is inspirational, which is an oxymoron when you think about, of course, the title. And then it's encouraging and inspirational, and then the part about the doctrine and theology about hell becomes informative in a non-threatening, non-judgmental, non-critical way. And I knew what I signed up, man. I knew what I signed up for when I wrote this book, so I really wanted to make sure that I was very particular and careful about the presentation, because, you know, you have the extremists out here, you have the fanatics, and as soon as they hear the word hell, it's like, okay, here they go again. You know what I mean? Kind of like that. So that's what inspired me to write the book.
Well, I think it's awesome because, I'll tell you why, because I think that it catches people's attention. The cover of the book is a school bus, okay? And
right.
It's a field trip to hell. And if people look at the news, they have to understand where we live is probably... Well, maybe it's run by the head of the hell. I don't know.
Right.
They say the state rules the earth, right? In order to get people's attention, sometimes you have to jump up in front of them. And I know when I wrote my book, From Las Vegas to the Promised Land, everybody was always on Las Vegas. You know, that was the key thing they wanted to talk about, Las Vegas. And, you know, it's one man's journey from death and destruction to his destiny. And it was finding Christ, you know, was the process. That's what the book is relating to. But when they made it number one in two categories on Amazon, it was under gambling.
Okay.
And, you know, the truth of the matter is, as long as you get recognized so that people can find their way, is the, you know, God uses whatever tools he feels is important. So
that's
love the school bus look. I like the book itself. Where are you located now? Are you still living in Philadelphia?
I'm still in, me and my wife live in the outskirts of Philadelphia. We live about maybe 7 minutes from the airport. So we live right on the border, but we're still here in Philadelphia.
What's the name of the area?
Lindbergh Boulevard. It's the Eastwick section of Philadelphia. I guess the best landmark would be 7 minutes from the Philadelphia airport. We're about 15 minutes drive from Center City, about 5 minutes from the sports complex where the Sixers play and the Eagles and Phillies play. So we live in a
So you're
pretty,
down
pretty
towards
nice
South
area.
Philadelphia?
It's be about maybe 5 minutes from South Philly, right over the bridge. Yep.
Okay.
If you,
very good.
Yeah, if you
very
go over
good,
to George
yeah.
C. Platt, yep.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been back in Pennsylvania. Well, actually, I was there for a visit in Valley Forge in 2010 for some work-related stuff. But I still have a lot of relatives who live in Norristown, and it's so much changed back there, you know. So, Kevin, tell me, are you running a leading a church there in that area? I think I read somewhere where you and your wife, Nikki, are very involved in a local church or community, right?
Yeah, we attend Enon Tabernacle Baptist Church. That's the church that we fellowship at. We used to do once a month fellowships under the auspices of Kevin Benton Ministries, and that's kind of what we used to do. So we've kind of turned our focus to get more degrees. That's kind of what me and my wife are doing right now. And so we're kind of, if you want to say, taking a sabbatical to focus on higher education. I love education, man, and so I'm always trying to enhance myself. My wife is always trying to enhance ourselves, so we, you know, be better tools for God. And so, you know, so, yeah, that's kind of what we're doing. But I still do and get invited to speak. In fact, next month I'll be traveling to go speak at a church, and so I still, you know, of course, get invited to speak and do workshops as well. And it's not just about, you know, the book or just in hell and things like that. So,
well, I'm reading in your book that, you know, I believe you took your SAT prep courses
in Norristown.
That's right.
That's
something.
Small world.
When I seen the book and I seen your bio, I showed it to my kids and I said, "Look, this young man is an athlete, and this is where he took himself." My youngest boy is a state champion football player from the Katy High School, which in Houston, you know, they're big, they're really big in the conference, and so they've all learned success, but they have to learn to deal with being humble. You know, and I think that God puts them in places so they can experience one. You know, the one boy never lost a game, and from 7th grade to 12th grade, lost one playoff game, not ever losing one regular season game. So when they speak at adversities on losing, he couldn't relate to it.
Okay.
And one of the things that you mentioned that I've recognized, too, is two of my boys are very disciplined in what they do because of what they learned on the field. And
absolutely.
So it's a big lesson. And so that brings me to a question, Kevin. You know, as parents, do you have children?
No.
Okay. But as parents, we always want our children to look up to athletes.
Right.
And, you know, I can remember when Dennis Rodman came out with different color hair, and he had to be one of the best defensive basketball players ever. You know, and he went crazy because of, you know, trying to gain publicity. And then you have steroids, you have all the different things that go on in sports, even murder. How do you teach your children the values of sports when you are dealing with people that are only being recognized for the bad in the sport?
It's one of those things that it really does boil back down to the home. And unfortunately, in this day and age, it seems like the family is a broken entity. And I remember I got a lot of my instruction at the dinner table. You know, me and my brother and my mother and father and my sister, we would all eat dinner together. And so that's when they kind of, through communication and kind of, you know, everyone keeping everyone abreast of what's going on in their life and what's going on in their day, that we got the chance to glean from some of the realities that it's okay to look up to athletes, but we need to, you know, of course, choose who we need to look up to. You know, you definitely don't want to emulate the negative behavior, because there's a lot of athletes out there that haven't really accepted the responsibility that comes with being a public figure. And I think Spider-Man said it best: with great power comes great responsibility. And so, rather be, you know, for various different reasons like their upbringing or so forth and so on, you know, some just perhaps weren't ready to take on that kind of responsibility to be a public figure, to accept what it means to be a role model, which means that what I do on the court or on the field needs to, you know, kind of be consistent off the field in terms of my good conduct and my good character. And the ultimate goal, not just for athletes but for all of us, is to try to, you know, we they say we always tend to put our best foot forward. And so the goal for all of us is to try to get our public self to be as consistent with our private self as much as we can. You know what I mean? And so, but I think that, you know, it is a responsibility that is placed on athletes, sometimes to the point of it being unfair, but it comes with the territory. It's one of those things that we as athletes have to count the cost. And, I mean, I can say for myself, just being thankful and grateful for, you know, having a mother and father in a home who, you know, were in our lives, that were active, that has played a huge role because I get up every day being mindful of being what they call testimony conscientious. And it's not that I'm not walking around paranoid. I'm being who I am, but I am in the frame of mind that somebody's always watching me. So if I say this, how's that going to impact, you know, someone around me? And, of course, right. Nobody's perfect. You always leave room for that. But, yeah, I think it starts in the home.
Kevin, we're right up against the clock. I think we've got about 8 seconds. I just want to say thank you for your time today. I will be reaching out to you. I want to learn more and how I can help you and put you on some other shows.
Okay. Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. You have a blessed day.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
This has been another edition of Tough Talk with Tony Gambone, brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. A special thanks to all of our sponsors. If you'd like to be a sponsor or a guest, please go to www.toughtalkradionetwork.com.